Hi, thank you. Today's presentation is going to be debugging Jython scripts for WSAdmin configuration changes, and we'll get right into it because this is going to be a little bit packed for an hour time frame, and I want to get over as much information as we can, so we can move on to slide 2. This is just the agenda for today. We're going to go over some WSAdmin basics in the WSAdmin properties file, scripting Jython basics, go over how to deal with strings, lists, dictionaries, and loops with Jython. Then we're going to cover some examples in admin config using query, create, modify, and delete. And then we're going to go over the troubleshooting tips and basically give some tips and tricks to debug any exceptions or issues you have when you're dealing with scripts in WebSphere Application Server. Slide 3. Okay, so we can move on to, we have WSAdmin basics here, slide 3. WSAdmin is the scripting interface for WebSphere Application Server. It gives you the ability to manage, configure, deploy, and provide runtime operations. Basically, you can do anything in scripting that you can do in the WebSphere Application Server admin console. It just makes it a lot easier, especially once you get some scripts created to perform tasks over and over again so that you don't make any mistakes and you know it's all going to be ran the same way. You can move on to slide 4. The WSAdmin basics, you start this up running WSAdmin and you want to use the options user and password when security is enabled. And then you can also use -lang to specify Jython because the default for WSAdmin is the Jackal language. When you specify -lang Jython, it is going to take a little bit of extra time to load and compile classes while it fires up for the first time. If you are using the same terminal and you run WSAdmin again in lang Jython, it's going to come up a lot quicker the next time after that. Basically, the other options are -help to get some syntax for the command, -c, and you can specify an actual command for WSAdmin, so you don't have to go all the way into the session. You can specify a command right there on the command line and run it and get the output from it. The same thing goes for if you want to use a script. You can use -f and then specify the script file name, which I see used quite often. Then basically con type. We want to use this if we do not want to connect to an application server process. And in that situation, we'll type in none in all capital letters. And this will allow you to make configuration changes when the WebSphere application server is not up and running. And we can move on to slide 5. This is all about the WSAdmin properties file. So inside this WSAdmin properties file that's located in the profile home properties folder. So for a deployment manager, it's under profiles, DMGR, properties. And for a base server, it would be profiles, AppServo1, properties. The contents of this file have some default settings that you can change. This way you don't have to specify things like lang Jython every time that you fire up WSAdmin. If you change, for example, the fifth bullet down is com IBM WS scripting default lang. You can find this line in that properties file. And here the default is Jackal, but you can change this to Jython. And then when you run WSAdmin, you no longer have to specify that -lang Jython. Also, when you're turning into some problems and you want to do a little bit of debug, you can trace your script by removing the hash mark in front of com IBM WS scripting.trace string. This will enable *= all for a trace, and that will actually go into the WSAdmin.traceout file. That's where you want to look for any of the tracing that gets enabled from enabling this. I usually keep this selected at all times, and then whenever I have a problem, I've already got the trace enabled, so I just keep that pound sign removed from the properties file. Also, if you change your default language to Jython, it's a good idea to set the profiles to .py instead of .jacl for these security scripts. Those scripts, both the Jacl and Jython language scripts, are located in that bin folder for the profile, so when you change this to .py, it's just going to use the appropriate scripting profile. You can move on to slide 6. Scripting basics, the basic command objects are help, admin config, admin control, admin app, and admin task. Today I'll go over some examples using admin config, but also admin control. That one is allowing you to basically make changes to the runtime or to access running mbeans, things like that. The admin app one is used for things like application deployment or making any application configuration modifications. And admin task is like predefined tasks. You can look up all this stuff on the Info Center. There's also a book that you can use that one of my coworkers, Bob Gibson, actually co-wrote, and that will also give you some more examples there, but we'll show you the links to that stuff towards the end of the presentation. You can go on to slide 7. So now we're on to the slide, what is Jython? Basically, Jython is an implementation of Python. It gives you access to most of the things that you can do in Python, you can do in Jython. It's got Java Security Framework. It's really easy to use and to read. Basically, anybody with programming knowledge can pick up on Jython rather quickly. So we can move on to slide 8. And Jython basics here. Comments always start with a pound sign. That's, for example, what I was showing you in the wsadmin.properties file. That comments out the entire line. Variables are created when a value is assigned. So the example in the screenshot here, name equals, and then inside of quotes I have my name, Preston Martin Law. That is a string being assigned to the variable of the variable name. So then you can print name, and it gives you back the string, Preston Martin Law. Statements exist in a single logical line. Code blocks are separated with indentation. Can be tabs or spaces. You want to make sure if you're doing code blocks, your spaces and tabs all line up. If you have one space off, it can really screw up your script, but I'll show you an example of that situation in a few slides. You can use a semicolon to put multiple lines on a single line of code. So you could do something like print names, semicolon, print Roscoe, semicolon, print Jade, and that will actually show up on three separate lines, as if you put it on three separate lines. For line continuation, a backslash can be used, so if you do print hello and you run out of space and you want to throw in Joe on the next line, a backslash there allows you to do so. We can move on to slide 9. A basic Jython example, executing files here. So in this little snippet, I have a file, lovescripting.py, and the contents are inside of those lines there. You can see my string equals Jython is awesome. My value is 0. And then basically I'm saying if my value equals equals 1, print out my string. So I think I made a mistake here, but if my value was equal to 1, then it would print out... Oh, I'm sorry, no, that... In the example in the screenshot there, you can see that Jython is awesome got printed. So I did make a mistake, because if my value equals 1, it's going to print out those stars and then the string Jython is awesome. So I can have that fixed. You can move on to slide 10. Slide 10 here. Basically, some string functions and methods. Len is used to give you the length of your variable here. So string equals how many characters is this string? Then running len in the screenshot there with string inside the parentheses, it gives you back 35, and that's the number of characters inside of that string. For split, you can choose a separator and then use a comma and then specify how many times you want it to split. In this example, in the middle screenshot there, you have string equals this is my test. So then I specify string.split, and I'm going to specify my separator here. In this case, I've got a blank space in between double quotes, and then I have a comma, and my max split is 2 times. So when I say I'm going to split it 2 times, I end up with 3 different pieces. I end up with the word this, and then that's split. And after that, I have the string is, and then after that, I have a third string, my test. So you can see that between my test, that did not get split because I only split it twice. Sequence slicing, I colon J. Basically here, you can specify where you want your slice. So in this case, I have string equals slice this in the screenshot at the bottom. When I specify string 3:8, it's going to use the third location in the string, which always starts at 0. So if you're looking at the string slice this, the S is location 0, L is 1, I is 2, and the C is 3. So it includes the third position there, and it goes to the eighth position, which is the H. And basically, it gives you back CE space TH. The next example there, string 6:900. This is going to give you from the sixth position to the 900th position. And because my string of slice this exclamation point does not go to a 900th position, it just gives me the end of it. So it says this exclamation point is what it returns. You can do the same kind of thing if you specify nothing there. Instead of doing 900, if I just had 6 and then the close bracket, that would be the same thing would be given back to me from the sixth position to infinity. The last example in that third screenshot, string and then -5 in the brackets there. The -5 counts from the last position in the string, counts back 5, and then it gives you just this exclamation point, and it would give you up until infinity because there was nothing specified after that colon. By 11. So working with lists, here we have a list that I specified in the top of the screenshot. It's my list equals, and it's got a bunch of different things here. It has integers, 1, and then it has a string 3, a string 5, and an integer 9. The options here for lists, we have len, which is the length. We have remove, insert, pop, index, count, and append. So we're going to step down through this screenshot, which is the example that I have for you guys. The first thing I did was specified my list, and it's always inside of brackets, separated by commas. When I print my list, it gives you back exactly what your list is in a printed format. If you do len, open parentheses, and specify your list inside of there, so I have my list in there, it's giving me back 4 objects in that list. When I do mylist.remove and I specify the value 5, it's actually going to remove the third value of that list, which was the string 5. And now if I print my list, it is giving me back just the 3 other values, 1, 3, and 9. Mylist.insert 1, and I'm saying the string 2. It's going to insert into the first position of the list the word 2. And what you have to remember here is that this always starts with position 0, then position 1, basic programming stuff. So when I say specify the first position, it's actually putting after the first position into the second. So when I print that back, it gives me 1, 2, 3, 9. Now I'm going to say mylist.pop 0. That's giving me back that very first value of the list, the number 1, the integer 1. And if I try to print my list back again, now I come back with 2, 3, 9, because not only did it provide me with the value 1, but it also, because of the pop, it actually removes it from the list. After the print my list, where I got the 2, 3, 9, towards the bottom of that screenshot, now I'm looking at mylist.index, the string 3. So this is just kind of like a search. It's giving me back the position of the list that contains the value 3. So it's giving me back the number 1 for the first position. So that's actually the second position, because it's always starting with 0. Then I'm going to do mylist.count, and I'm going to say the integer 9. That's giving me back a 1, because 9 is in that list one time. And then mylist.append, and that is appending the value string end to the end of the list. So here I have print my list. If you could see the value of that, it would have been 2, 3, 9, then the word end. We can move on to slide 12. Dictionaries, we have my dictionary equals, these are basically keys and values here. So the key name has the value Preston. Then I do a comma. The key ID has the value 5456. Another comma to separate. Then we have office is F330. It's like a little mini database. So you can basically set it that way inside the curly brackets and separate the keys and values with colons and separate the key value pairs with commas. You can do my dictionary K, keys values has key. And in the screenshot, I'll show you the example of that. So print my dictionary is giving me back the values that I had assigned it. Then if I do len my dictionary, it's actually giving me back how many key value pairs I have, which are 3. If I do my dictionary office, it gives me back 330. Basically here I'm specifying the key office. It's giving me back the pair for that word office, which is the value F330. Here, the next example, if I set my dictionary office and here I assign it a value of F333 by using the equal sign and then giving it inside of quotes a string, the next time I print my dictionary, it's giving me that new value for office. You can see now it's named Preston, office F333, ID 5456. You can get back just your keys, so you can do mydictionary.keys, and it gives you back name, office, and ID. You can do mydictionary.values, gives you back only the values, which are Preston F333 and 5456. And then I'm basically asking my dictionary has underscore key Preston. So this key gives you back a 0. Preston comes back as 0 because Preston in the example is a value of the key name. So it's giving you a false for that. My dictionary has key name is true, so it's giving you back a 1 because there is a key called name. We can move on to slide 13. Here we have two different ways of doing loops here, just examples. For while, you can do x equals 10 while x is greater than 0. And after if statements, whiles, and lists, you want to put in a regular full colon here then on the next line is what's going to be included with that statement. In this situation, I have a code block underneath, and that's why I have it indented. You can see I don't have to put anything after the lines. I just put print x, and then I have x minus equals 1. So in this situation, it goes through the loop. The first time, x is 10, which is greater than 0, so it goes ahead and prints that. Then it subtracts 1 from the value of x and prints out 9, and it keeps going from top to bottom through the loop until x equals 0, gets to the top. 0 is greater than 0, which is false, so it basically kills the loop at that point. For the for statement, I have a list equaling 1, 2, 3, 4. For x in list is basically saying for the value inside this list, once we run out of values, we are going to exit. So if I say print x and then print len, it's giving me the value and then it's giving me the length of that particular value. So you can see when that prints out the example afterward, you see 1 is printed and then 3 because it's 3 characters. The word 2 is printed, then 3 because it's 3 characters. The string of 3 is printed, and then that's only 1 character. And the string 4 is printed, and that's only 4 characters. Then it gets down to that else statement, and it prints out done printing length of elements. You can move on to slide 14. So admin config, we can do query, create, modify, and delete. You can invoke this with or without a connection to the server using admin config. As long as you specify contype none, when you connect to WSAdmin, you won't need the connection to the server to use admin config. So basically that's going to make the configuration changes, and then you can save the config afterward once you make the changes. Just some examples of identifying config objects, you can use types, attributes, required, defaults, and parents, and we'll show some examples of these. Basically, to use those, you can do print admin config.attributes, specify your configuration type. Here I've just said monitoring policy, and I do have some examples of what are printed out after that in the coming slides. When you specify get ID in the very last segment here, you can see print admin config.getID, and you basically have name, type name pairs, and you have to have the forward slash before and afterward, and also in between each name value pair. So here we have server colon server 1, and this is case sensitive, so if you have server with a lowercase s here, basically that's going to fail out for you. And if you want to specify your node or your cell in this situation, you would put the forward slash in between the name value pair for specifying the node and the server. You can move on to slide 15. Okay, so here we have some examples of using admin config list. If you look at the first screenshot here, I'm using getID, and I'm specifying a variable scopeID equals, I'm saying admin config.getID, I'm using that server colon server 1. This is giving me back the config ID for server 1. So when I print scopeID, you can see that the config ID was set. And it starts with server 1, which is the name. And at the very end, you see server.xml and a hash mark, server underscore, and a number there. That associates to the tag inside of that server XML file. The middle of that screenshot, you see print admin config.list, monitoring policy, comma scope ID. So here's where the example for list is. I am basically saying here, I want to see the object identifier for the monitoring policy, inside of the scope, which is that server one. So when that prints back, it's giving me server XML --monitoring_policy_, and a number there. That is the tag identifier for the monitoring policy settings inside the server XML. So basically, that's how you start to make changes to the different areas of an XML file. Here we've got the monitoring policy identifier, and that's what we're going to use to make any changes. So now, another example, you can check how many servers do I have configured in that middle screenshot. You can see that I do print admin config.list, and I specify server. So this is going to give me back every single server that's in this environment underneath this network deployment server. I have a DMGR, I have a node agent, and I have a server one. If I were to assign that admin config.list server to a variable called server list, then if I did the len and I said server list.splitlines, that would give me back 3. And the reason I do the split lines is because if I don't do that, it's going to give me back a number of characters. I have to split the lines based on each one of those servers is on its own line in that middle screenshot. So if I split those lines, it's going to put them into a list, and it's giving me back 3 because the list contains then 3 different IDs. It's got the DMGR in the first value, then the node agent in the second, and the server one in the third value. So that's kind of how you can really start to assign IDs to variables, and you can start doing searches and splitting those out so that it's not all in one string there. You can move on to slide 16. Slide 16, we have admin config query. I'm going to show you some examples for show attribute, show, and show all. Basically, we have in the first screenshot, monitoring policy equals admin config.list monitoring policy. This is a quick way of getting back the ID for the monitoring policy. So if I do print monitoring policy, I get back the ID, and that's defaulting to server 1 in this situation. Because I didn't specify a scope, it's going to give me back the very first server that was probably the very first server that was created in the environment. In this case, it's server 1. So it's giving me back server XML for server 1, pointing to the monitoring policy in there. If I do print admin config.attributes, and now I'm specifying that variable monitoring policy, here it is looking inside there and giving me back all the different attributes that can be used for the monitoring policy. It's not giving me back the attributes that are set, just the attributes that are able to be put in there. If I do admin config.showAttribute and specify monitoring policy, and now I give it the attribute that I'm looking for, which is auto restart, it gives me back the Boolean true. So here in that screenshot, if I changed auto restart in those quotes to ping interval, for example, it would give me back the ping interval. So first you can look for the attributes, and then you can see, okay, these are all the different attributes that can be used for monitoring policy. Now I can get back the value that's set inside that server XML. Bottom screenshot there, I'm using show, and that is giving me back the values and what they are set to, or the keys and what they're set to. So auto restart was true, maximum startup attempts was 3, node agent, or the node restart state was stopped, and so on. At the bottom there, I'm going to do another way of using show, and I'm doing print admin config.show. I'm saying the monitoring policy, which is pointing to that monitoring policy in server 1. And here I have inside of brackets, I'm showing auto restart and node restart state. That's going to give me back just those 2 that I'm looking for so that I don't have to look at all of them. You can move on to slide 17. Here we have admin config create method. This is the syntax you want to do, the type, parent, and attributes. Basically here, type is a config ID of object, parent is a config ID of the object's parent. In this situation, if I was going to create a server, the parent would be the node agent because the node agent is above the server. That's just one example. Parent attribute name, that part is optional, specifies the name of the attribute in the parent object where a new object is attached. So I'll just show you some example of that if you go to slide 18. Here I have an example in this screenshot that I'm going to step you through. If you do print admin config.required and you're looking for server requirements, it's telling you that the only requirement is name, and the name is a type of string. So now, if I want to create the server, I need to know what its parent is. Print admin config.parents specifying server is going to give me back node and server cluster. So either one of these are the parents. So I want to use node, parent ID equals admin config.getID, and here I'm getting the ID of the node in my environment. Now when I print parent ID, you can see that it did point to the node 03 XML, which is correct. So now I can go ahead and create my server. I specify server, comma, parent ID is the variable that's pointing to my node. That's my node XML file for node 1, which is PMLaw node 03. And then inside of the double brackets, I have name and server 2. So basically here I'm creating a server 2 for the parent node 03. And it gives you back the new identifier for that server 2, which you just created. You can move on to slide 19. Modifying an attribute, you just specify modify. It's very similar. Then you want to put the object ID, and you can specify the attributes. So in the bottom here, I have an example for admin config.modify. When people want to remove the value for a particular item like ClassPath, here I'm modifying the DB2 provider ID, and I'm changing the ClassPath for that to nothing. So here you just do open close brackets to reset the class path to nothing. Then I'll show you some other examples. You can move on to slide 20. Modifying monitoring policy attributes. So here we're going to use monitoring policy again. I'm going to step you through an example of making a change inside the monitoring policy. So here again I'm doing print admin config.attributes monitoring policy. That's kind of where we left off. So here I have monitoring policy is pointing to the monitoring policy it was for server 1. Here I'm going to do, now I have three different servers. Towards the top of that screenshot, about 9 lines down, you see print admin config.list monitoring policy. So in this case, I have three different servers. So I have three different monitoring policies. I want to make a change to a specific one. So here I can do, I'm going to set monitor ID equal to that list monitoring policy. And in this situation, I'm running dot split lines at the end of that line, which is going to make a list of those three. So that the first one's going to be 0, the second one's going to be 1, and the third one is going to be 2. Now when I specify monitor ID equals monitor ID 2, I'm actually grabbing the third ID in the list, which is for server 3. So when I print that out, you can see server.xml monitoring policy for server 3. Now I'm towards the bottom of the screenshot. If I'm looking at printadminconfig.show and I say monitor ID, it's giving me the values that are set for the monitoring policy. Now I see what's set there and I want to make a change. We're going to change the auto restart, which is true, to false, and the node restart state, which is stopped, we're going to make that running. So to make that change, it's adminconfig.modify. We're specifying that server 3's monitoring policy, so that's the variable for monitor ID. Then we're going to use the open brackets. We're going to specify auto restart state to comma false and node restart state to running. Once I hit enter there, I get nothing back. It just goes back to WSAdmin here. And now I want to make sure that change was made correctly. So I'm going to print adminconfig.show monitor ID again. At this point, I'm happy with the results. It made the change. If I were to save the configuration here, I would have to do adminconfig.save open close parentheses. Then that would actually save it to the configuration XML. Otherwise, this is just a temporary state. And if I closed out this without saving, it wouldn't actually be changed to the XML file. We move on to slide 21. Query changes. Here's an example of that. So basically, if I did not save after trying to create a server, and I do this at the top of the screenshot, printadminconfig.queryChanges. This is giving me back all the different XML files that are going to be changed inside my configuration if I perform that adminconfig.save. So here, it's just a good example of when you're creating a server, these are all the different files that it actually creates for you or modifies. And if I were to do just like the monitoring policy that we did in the previous example, and I did a query changes here, you would only then see the server XML for server 3. Sometimes you're in WSAdmin doing a lot of things, and say you're doing a lot of testing, and you figure out, okay, well, actually now I want to do one thing here, but before I continue, I want to make sure that I'm not going to screw anything else up. You can do an admin config query changes to make sure that nothing has been set. Then you can go ahead, make a change that you want to make, and save it. It's just a good way of figuring out what's going to be modified when you go to make that save. You can go to slide 22. Admin config delete. Basically, to delete, you do remove. So config ID equals admin config get ID. In this situation, it's data source, my data source. And then if I want to remove that, I just specify admin config.remove and give it that config ID that I set to that data source. Here, if we do admin config.reset, it's actually going to revert the changes that I've made, and I can continue on. So that's just a way of resetting anything that you might have done that you don't want to save. And then if you do the save, it actually saves it. So you can move on to slide 23 here. Here's where we get into the trips and or the tips and the troubleshooting recommendations. These are some of the common exceptions that we see in support where customers have a hard time understanding what could be wrong with their scripts and what they can do to fix it. So the first one I'm going to explain is WASX7015E. In the screenshot there, you can see that it says exception running command, adminconfig.getid, node pmlaw test server server 1, and it says invalid config data type exception. The configuration data type server is not valid. So in this situation, it's basically a typo. If you're looking at server colon server 1, server should be capitalized with a capital S. So it's kind of like a it's a little bit of a syntax error here, but at the same time, the syntax is right. It's just that server is not a valid type. You have to have it correctly spelled, so it would be a capital S in this case. So that's the answer to that one. If you fix that in the bottom screenshot and you specify admin config.getid, and I'm doing node pmlaw test, capital S on server 1, you can see that it actually returns the ID for server 1. And we'll go on to slide 24. Here we have another example. It's the BSF exception. Exception from Jython. So sometimes I'll get a customer that wrote a Jython script and they try to execute a Jython script. And I'll actually see a similar thing here, and it might say BSF exception from Jackal. In that case, I know that they didn't specify dash Jython or dash lang Jython when they started WSAdmin. But in this example, in the screenshot here, you can see that I did something similar. I did admin config.getid, and I'm specifying pmlaw test server 1. Here I got back a BSF exception. In this case, it gives me attribute error getID. Here, a BSF exception, 95% of the time I would say, it's basically a syntax issue, and that's because getID with a capital I isn't the correct command for the admin config. It's actually all lowercase. So if I do that right, it comes back correctly. It could be a typo, or it could be a missed open close parenthesis, or an open close bracket, or a forward slash in the wrong direction. Those kinds of things are all going to give you that BSF exception. So if you're looking at something that comes back with that BSF exception, you always want to make sure that everything is correct from a syntax perspective. And what I normally do, if I don't see what's wrong in my script, then I'll go into the information center and make sure that I'm using the right syntax for that command. But it usually also gives you like a line. Here it says line 1 because it wasn't really a huge file that I ran, but it was actually just one line. But it did give me the attribute error getID. So it's pretty good in pointing you out to the right parts. Sometimes, though, you might see where it kind of points out something that looks totally correct, but you might have some variables being used. In that case, you want to go back and make sure that the variables are set correctly. If that all looks good, you want to start debugging the script by printing out what your variables are set at. So I'll kind of go over some of that, too. You can go to slide 25. So here I've got a script that I'm going to use as an example here. In that text here, that looks kind of like a typewriter text compared to what's at the top of the screen, you can see the pound sign for a comment line. It just says test Jython script for printing JDBC providers. Here I have just some things to make the script look good. I say print starting script, and that just shows me where I'm starting. So if I get a failure at any point, it's going to actually, I'll know that the failure was either before it actually ran the file or it was actually after it was inside of my script. And that's why at the very last thing I have it doing some printing as well. And it's just a good practice to print out your variables. So here, if you want to move on to slide 26, we might jump back to slide 25 here and there just to show, but I think I have examples pointed out so that I don't have to jump backward. Basically here, we have by request, the scripting client is not connected to any server process. That's because I did the WSAdmin contype none, and I was actually giving it the dash F to run a script called test. Py. Here, you can see it came back with some error message when running test.py, and it says incomplete config ID, need closing parentheses in open close quotation marks. So that's kind of not too helpful unless you know what to look for, because it's not pointing me to a specific line in the script. But if you look closely in that screenshot, you can see that the line starting script with all those dash marks, that was printed. So you know that you were inside the script when the error occurred. You were before the end of the script, and you were after that starting script line. So when I looked back at the script, config ID, that always points out where you're actually using a config ID, not where you're trying to print out a config ID or get an ID, but that always points to when you're trying to use the ID. The only line in there that I was doing that was this following one towards the bottom of this slide. It says JDBC providers equals admin config dot list JDBC provider comma node ID. Here, that exception need closing parentheses in basically a null value. Node ID was empty in this situation. So now in the script, I have to look back and see why would node ID be incorrect here. So you can move on to slide 27. So basically, I went back up into the script. Node ID was set to the following, admin config.getID node, and the plus. Here, this is like where I'm combining a string and a variable. So you can see a quotation mark, / node, which looks correct, colon, I have another quotation mark. Then inside the quotes, I have plus signs with node name. So node name here is a variable. And then I have another string towards the end there that's a / So the / are right. As long as node name is working correctly here, the ID for node name should be working. So then I went back up into my script, and I saw node name equals PMLawTest. In this case, PMLawTest is the node name. So now you want to try to figure out, okay, well, why isn't that working? So let's do a little bit of a test. We'll open up a WSAdmin session, and you can do a line by line to see what's occurring. This way, when your script is running, you're not really seeing a line by line situation. You're seeing when it tries to run the whole script, it errors out. So let's do it line by line. We set node name equals PMLawTest as it was in the script, and then we do the node ID equals the get ID for node name. And when I try to print that, nothing is returned. So that makes sense. That's why I got that original exception of a null node ID or of a null config ID. So now there's something wrong. It's not seeing PMLawTest as a node. So now we need to figure out, okay, well, we need to make sure node name of PMLawTest is a valid name. I know that PMLawTest is the name of my node, but now I want to look back in and see if I can verify that somewhere. So you can move on to slide 28. Slide 28 here just gives you some more explanation. It's how you can kind of add in some error checking. So if I'm doing the node ID equals admin config get ID node name here, if I don't want to have some kind of error message that complains about a config ID when I run the script, I can put in something else here, like if node ID equals empty, you want to print right there, error node ID, variable is a null value. That way I know, hey, when I run this script, if I get this error message, I know that admin config get ID for node name is what's breaking. When I ran that this time, you can see inside that screenshot, you see the starting script, but then now you get an error that actually makes sense to you because it says error node ID variable is a null value. And now when you see that WebSphere exception that the config ID is incomplete, that makes sense because you saw the same thing in your error checking. If you go to slide 29, we will check that out. Now, I want to confirm that PMLawTest was a valid node name, and I know PMLawTest was a node, but I wanted to confirm, so I look back in the folder structure, and here you see PMLawTest is all capitalized, and that's why we're getting that problem here. So you can move on to slide 30. So I fixed the typo in the script test.py, ran it again. This time I got a valid printout, and it just basically prints out all my JDBC providers, which is what I wanted. So that was just like a step-by-step how to go about fixing something that's broken. If you go to slide 31, just got some tips here. You always want to make sure your WSAdmin session is connected to the deployment manager and ND environment. Sometimes, especially with deployments, we see customers connect to a node agent or an application server, and that's because they want to deploy an application to, say, server 1, and server 1's under node 1. So they try to connect WSAdmin to that server 1, which in an ND environment, that's not correct, because what you want to do is make sure that you're connecting to the deployment manager configuration so that when WebSphere synchronizes, it actually pushes that information then out to the node and expands that application onto that server so that the application's where it needs to be and it has that backup in the deployment manager configuration. What you might end up seeing sometimes is if you connect to WSAdmin on the server, you might be able to properly connect to server 1 and obtain the configuration ID for server 1, and you might even be able to deploy it correctly. But then when your configuration is saved, now your configuration is saved directly on that server. When the deployment manager synchronizes, it's going to wipe that out, and then you're going to go into your admin console and you're going to wonder, where's my application? I had a script and it worked and it properly deployed and I got a successful message. And now it's not even in my console. So what went wrong? You always want to make sure that your deployment manager is what you're connecting to. You want to make sure WSAdmin tracing is enabled. And you always want to check your WSAdmin traceout file. Sometimes you'll get a script that runs through and you might get some exception that shows up in the command prompt, or you might just have some kind of a batch file that runs your script for you and you might not even see a printout because the command prompt is kind of done in the background for you, and that you always want to go back in and look at the WSAdmin traceout file, make sure that you don't have any other errors. And if you do, you can work your way up through that traceout file and see if there's anything that stands out as to why that was failing for you. If WSAdmin is launched from a separate install or separate machine connecting to a remote server, this is something that you can do as well. If you have, say, a base WebSphere application server on your laptop, but you want to run some scripting against your production network deployment server that's on a different machine, you don't have to necessarily open up like a remote session or anything like that. You could actually run WSAdmin on your laptop, and when you do con type SOAP, you can do things like specify the host name and SOAP port of the deployment manager of your production server, and you can connect that way directly to your server as a client and make changes and do your WSAdmin scripting right from your laptop. Those kinds of things can be done. The only thing is, when you're watching and doing some debug and trying to figure out where your WSAdmin traceout is, it's not going to be on the production server that you connected to. You could look at like the system out log on that production server if you're doing runtime changes and things like that. But if you want to look at the scripting log, that's going to be done on the client side on your laptop. It's going to be on your machine where you ran WSAdmin from. So that's what you want to kind of keep in check. As long as you know where you're running WSAdmin from and where you're connecting to, you can kind of figure out what to look at. And then also, when you test actions in the console, sometimes you might get a script that fails and it gives you some kind of like a deployment exception. That doesn't mean your script is bad. That just means that there was some kind of problem. So you might want to try the same exact task in the admin console just to see if what you're trying to do in the script is going to work when you try it on the console too. That way you can kind of narrow it out and decide whether you need to look into the deployment more or if you need to look into the script. So then also, if it works in the console but it doesn't work in your script, a good way to pinpoint it is to work backwards, printing every variable and kind of doing some error checking and making sure that you don't have null values and make sure that you have valid arguments specified. So you always want to kind of work backwards, because if you get an error on some kind of a create message but you have six variables that go into that, you kind of want to look back and see, okay, were these variables found correctly? Are they printing out correctly? Did I assign them correctly? You can move on to slide 32. Basically, this is just some overview. The admin config is the basic command object for modifying XML configuration. The BSF exception is always going to kind of point to the syntax side of things. Not always. Sometimes it's something else, but usually BSF exception is going to be giving you syntax exceptions. So you want to look at examples on the Information Center or go back to your scripting books and take a look at those things. You always want to work your way backwards in the scripts and test the things in the console that you're trying to perform. If you move on to slide 33, this is our resources. The very top link here, this is the book that Bob Gibson was a co-writer of. He's a peer of mine in WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support. It's an incredible book when you're trying to do some scripting things. It's way more advanced than this presentation was, but it also kind of steps you up and kind of points out a lot of things to you. So I would definitely recommend that book. It's really good. It's not very expensive. You can usually find some coupon codes and things like that to get that. So you can visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentations. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. You can visit websphereusergroup.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistance consists of self-help modules to get new users up to the learning curve pretty quickly. It's a good way to start fixing problems. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. That's also recommended. It's a good way of electronically looking at those things. And my notifications link on all product support pages let you sign up for weekly email updates for products that interest you. And at that point, we're all set with this presentation. Joseph, I think you might want to take over here.
Thank you, Preston, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Teresa, we would like to open the lines for questions.
There are no questions at this time.
Thank you, Teresa. And at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.